This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. I apologize for the sound of my voice as I'm still recovering from a cold. Former President Bill Clinton is under fire for off-the-cuff remarks that he made at a campaign event for his wife in New York last week. During his speech, a couple of activists held banners that read, "Clinton crime bill destroyed our communities." Well, here is part of what Mr. Clinton said in response.
Work. She recognizes, however, that there are barriers that we have to take down. Yesterday, she and the mayor were talking about reentry programs for young people who get out of prison, who've been in there too long for nonviolent offenses. She was the first person that really talked about that. But in order to do it, they talked about this yesterday. In order to do it. Wait a minute. Okay, I heard it. Can I answer? No, you see, here's the thing. I like protesters, but the ones that won't let you answer are afraid of the truth. That's a simple rule. Be afraid. Very, very afraid.
The former president went on to lecture the activists, and we'll play you clips from that in our interview. But later on, a day later, the president said that he almost wanted to apologize for what he said. My guest is Jody Armour. He is the Roy P. Crocker Professor of Law at the University of Southern California. He's the author of Negrophobia and Reasonable Racism, The Hidden Costs of Being Black in America, also a Soros Justice Senior Fellow of the Open Society Institute Center on Crime, Communities, and Culture. And he is the Race and Criminal Justice Correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. Welcome to the program, Jody.
Good to be back with you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, I want to play some clips from what Clinton went on to say. But first, what was your sort of general response to what happened? Clearly, the former president went way off script.
Yeah, well, it was a moment of truth is what I first thought. It was like opening a time capsule. I remember that rhetoric vividly from the 90s when he was running for office the first time. Remember, in 1992, Bill Clinton left the campaign trail, went back to Arkansas so he could preside over the execution of an inmate named Ricky Ray Rector, who was so mentally retarded when he was put to death that after he had his last meal, he asked the guards to save his pecan pie so he could eat it after his execution. That's how mentally retarded Ricky Ray Rector was, and Bill Clinton went back from the campaign trail to make his tough on crime law and order statement by putting him to death. So this was just a really kind of a reckoning. It was a moment of truth is how it struck me.
So let's play a clip of Clinton responding to accusations over the crime bill.
Now look, what she's referring to are the increased sentencing provisions of the 1994 crime bill. 90% of the people in prison too long are in state prisons and local jails, more than 90%. But it's also true that there are too many people in the state prisons. I mean, the federal prisons. President Obama's trying to let them out. Here's what happened. Let's just tell the whole story. When I became president, the headlines in the newspapers were full of, now wait a minute, I listen to you, you listen to me. Wait. Here's what happened. Vice President Biden, you guys know Vice President Biden, whose family comes from Scranton, he was the chairman of the committee that had jurisdiction over this crime bill. I had an assault weapons ban in it. I had money for inner city kids, for out of school activities. We had 110,000 police officers so we could put people on the street, not in these military vehicles, and the police would look like the people they were policing. We did all that. And Biden said, you can't pass this bill, the Republicans will kill it if you don't put more sentencing in. I talked to a lot of African-American groups. They thought Black Lives Mattered. They said, take this bill because our kids are being shot in the street by gangs. We had 13-year-old kids planning their own funerals. She doesn't want to hear any of that. You know what else she doesn't want to hear? Because of that bill, we had a 25-year low in crime, a 33 low in the murder rate, year low rate, murder rate. And listen to this. Because of that and the background check law, we had a 46-year low in the deaths of people by gun violence. And who you think those lives were? That mattered. Whose lives were saved? That mattered.
And that is President Bill Clinton speaking last week in New York at a campaign event. He thought he was talking to Black Lives Matter activists. It was actually a couple, Erica Mines and Rufus Farmer, and they say they're not affiliated with Black Lives Matter. A lot of things in what he just said, Jody. First, he proceeded to kind of say that the majority of incarceration happens at the state level. The crime bill was at the federal level. Then he went on to almost blame Biden. Then he went on to attribute all these great things to the crime bill. What is your response to all of this?
Well, yeah, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that all these things are attributable to the crime bill, then kind of blame it on Biden, and then say, well, crime was really bad back then, so the end justifies the means. At the time, look, what Clinton was engaging in was a cynical political exercise in which he said, I'm going to triangulate issues. I'm going to take away from the right the issues that the right has been beating us on, like crime after the Democrats lost the 88 election with Dukakis against George Bush Sr., in part because of Willie Horton ads that portrayed a black recidivist who got out and committed some more crimes. That was in part the reason that Dukakis lost that 88 election. So Clinton came in and said, let me outflank the right on a number of important social issues, including crime. Let me show I can be tougher on crime than they are. I'm going to take Pell Grants from prisoners, for example, but who need it for rehabilitation. I'm going to give billions of more dollars for prison construction. I'm also going to give a lot of money to beef up the police presence in the streets. I'm going to put in mandatory minimums. So he outflanked the right on crime, and he did the same with welfare reform, and he did the same with NAFTA, and it was all part of a fairly arguably cynical exercise showing that you can lurch more to the right than your opponents. And now we're relitigating, we're re-adjudicating his presidency, and he doesn't like it. He's upset about the comments that are being made about some of his failed policy.
Right. And I should mention, actually, Hillary Clinton had also been confronted by an activist with Black Lives Matter earlier in her campaign who quoted back to her some of her language during the time when she referred to young black men as super predators and said we have to bring them to heel. So she has kind of, this issue has been dogging her as well. And finally, when Bill Clinton was confronted with it last week, he seemed to sort of lose it. Let's see what he had to say about welfare reform, which you mentioned earlier was also something that happened during his presidency that was also very destructive to the African-American community. Here is Clinton again from last week.
Now let's talk about the other thing. They say the welfare reform bill increased poverty. Then why do we have the largest drop in African-American poverty in history when I was president? The largest in history. What happened was all these Republicans got into the Senate, Supreme Court elected President Bush 5-4. Then all these Republicans took over state legislatures. We left them with enough money to take care of all the poor people who couldn't go to work on welfare. We left them with the money they had before the welfare revolts went down 60%. The Republicans took it away, and they're blaming me. And apparently she had nothing to do with it. And the reason is they know it's true is they won't hush. When somebody won't hush and listen to you, that ain't democracy. They're afraid of the truth.
Clinton saying they're afraid of the truth, referring to two activists in the audience at a campaign event for Hillary Clinton. So, Jody, here he's basically saying during his presidency, poverty in the African-American community dropped significantly. He's attributing that to the welfare bill. And then he's essentially saying that after he left office, the Republicans screwed it up, and it was because of them that his welfare reform ended up pushing more African-Americans into poverty. Does any of that ring true?
Well, no, it was amply foreseeable at the time that the welfare reform was being enacted that these kinds of horrible contingencies could come to pass, that you have black people in America who are at the faces at the bottom of the well economically, in terms of wealth, in terms of income, employment rates, et cetera. So you're going to disproportionately burden and hurt them by shredding the safety social net that came from FDR, social welfare as we know it, and leave them now, when the economy does turn back to less flush times. Yes, he did have some good economic times during his tenure. But you could foresee that down the road there would be an economic cycle and a downturn, and then there wouldn't be any safety net for all of those disproportionately black people at the bottom, but not only black people, needless to say. So the reason I keep bringing up the black people point is there's so much irony in people referring to Bill Clinton for so long as the first black president, or having a special affinity for blacks, when all of his programs, from NAFTA to welfare reform to his prison industrial bill, some might say, or his criminal justice reform, let's put it that way, all of these initiatives by him devastated the black community. So to call him the first black president is supremely ironic in light of his record.
And Jody, I wish I could have seen the makeup of that audience, but he intimated throughout his off-the-cuff rant that he ensured that Black Lives Mattered. I mean, he even sort of kind of sarcastically used the terminology in terms of whose life mattered. And so I wonder whether the audience there was largely white or a mixed crowd. But we also do know that in many states, Hillary Clinton has managed to attract far more African-American voters than her main Democratic rival, Bernie Sanders. And I don't know exactly, you know, what that says, but do you think that Bill Clinton, and even Hillary to an extent, through their policies and their rhetoric, have in a way tried to appease a certain segment of the black population, the Bill Cosby segment, if you will, that feels that the only way to deal with black poverty, unemployment, crime, etc., is through these tough-on-crime measures, even though they sort of know in their heart of hearts that it doesn't work?
Well, that's spot on, Sonali. Bill Clinton actually expressed and represented viewpoints that weren't just limited to him, but that many even in the black community shared at the time, and some still do, but you put your finger right on it with people like Bill Cosby, and Chris Rock had a famous stand-up routine in which he said, yeah, I love black people, but I hate N-words, and one of his core definitions of an N-word was a black criminal. So there was this politics of respectability that many black people were caught up into, and this is the day of reckoning for many of those. In 2016, that rhetoric sounds dated and draconian and wrong-headed. But at the time, it seemed perfectly appropriate and reasonable, and we could easily go back to those times. We have to realize, if we aren't vigilant to protect against any slides back towards blaming victims for their own poverty and homelessness and the other criminogenic conditions that drive crime.
Now, I don't know if I remember this correctly, but hadn't Bill Clinton apologized way back in the past, before his wife was campaigning, for his actions that led to more African Americans in prison?
Yes, that's the interesting thing. A year ago, he was saying, well, I made a mistake, mea culpa. You know, it was, yeah, it was almost kind of a come to Jesus moment and reckoning with his past mistakes when it comes to criminal justice and criminal justice reform. On the one hand, a year ago, on the other hand, now, a year later, he's defending those draconian proposals and talking about super predators and returning us to that kind of discourse that viewed children as somehow bad seed and so much toxic human waste that we needed to dump them and treat them with life imprisonment and not try to understand what kind of got them to where they are. So it's Bill Clinton talking against Bill Clinton in a way, and he may be trying to speak to two different constituencies at the same time, but what it sounds like to others is he's trying to talk out of both sides of his mouth, and that's never a good look for a politician.
Right, and then a day after, or several days after this speech that he gave where he went off script last week, he responded to criticisms. And here's what he said. I mean, people thought he was going to apologize. He said, "I like and believe in protests, but I never thought I should drown anybody else out. And I confess, maybe it's just a sign of old age, but it bothers me now when that happens. I almost want to apologize for it, but I want to use it as an example of the danger threatening our country." What do you make of this non-apology, Jody?
Yeah, it's a non-apology masquerading as a partial apology, and maybe he put his finger right on it when he said maybe he's too old to change or to accept responsibility for his own mistakes, and it has nothing to do with chronological age, because look, Bernie Sanders is cleaning up with millennials, even though he has a lot of moons under his belt. It's not about chronological age, but old ways of thinking. And Bill Clinton is stuck in a 90s time warp. And a lot of his friends are, and unfortunately a lot of Americans are, and we need to move out of it. And I think he kind of gave the game away when he said what he said.
And speaking of Bernie Sanders, Sanders responded this week saying, "I think the president owes the American people an apology for trying to defend the indefensible. The philosophy was to get votes by beating up with the poorest people in the society, by cutting benefits. We are not going to do that." What do you make of that response?
Well, that frankly is spot on, and there were a lot of hands that were dirty from the 90s and the 80s during the crack war and in its festering aftermath. We thought that we could arrest and incarcerate our way out of our social problems. We thought that we could make our jails the receptacle of our social failures, like mental health problems and crumbling schools and homelessness. We've discovered that we can't do that, and so there's been a change in the way we think and talk about these matters. But occasionally people like Bill Clinton open that time capsule and take us back in time and remind us how easily we can go back to a tough on crime approach to things that says we have to be punitive in our approach to social problems and not try to treat people with dignity and humanity.
And Jody, going back to the couple that confronted Bill Clinton last week, Erica Mines and Rufus Farmer, there was an interview with Erica Mines where she said, We did not intend to be confrontational in any manner. We just wanted to exercise our right to freedom of expression. We were not there to say Black Lives Matter, just there to show discontent with Hillary Clinton because she's profited off of the black vote, and now she's going after mothers who've lost their children due to unjust policing. It's almost a contradiction. You can't be against unjust policing and be in favor of the death penalty. She has to address those issues too, said Erica. Do you think, Jody, as this campaign progresses, that more and more people, particularly in the African-American community, if, especially as the media covers the Clintons and the Clintons themselves sort of have these moments, that there may be increasing awareness of what the Clintons truly stand for? Or are they going to continue to be able to pull the wool over people's eyes?
Well, yeah, this is a day of reckoning in a lot of ways. They're learning that, as we all do, history doesn't move so much in a straight line or like an arrow as it does like a boomerang. And if you take a lot of positions that turn out to be bad positions, you better keep a steel helmet handy. And the Clintons need some steel helmets now because some of their policies are boomeranging on them and seem draconian and out of step today. And what Hillary Clinton is doing is about the best she can hope to do, to say, now I've seen the light where once I was blind, now I can see and I can change. She can, you know, do that old John Legend song, "I Can Change," and try to convince people on that ground, and she may be able to do that. But with people like Bill Clinton constantly reminding us of, you know, really how it used to be and how it may still be, it's going to be problematic. But she does have to get the albatross off her neck of the history she has with welfare reform and super predator comments and the like. She may be able to do it, but she should have to address it at the very least.
So finally, Jody, do you think that what happened with Bill Clinton may mar her campaign? I mean, we're still halfway through the primary race, but you know, she has been picking up momentum. She's still significantly ahead of Sanders in terms of delegate counts. Certainly, she's clinched it with the superdelegates, and there's plenty of reasons why she's done that. There's been some reports of how she's managed to use the Citizens United ruling to in her favor with super PAC money, but also cut deals state by state. There's been a lot of reporting on that. But in general, when it comes to voters, could this sort of stymie her momentum?
It depends on how much sway the Black Lives Matter zeitgeist that really is current, driving a lot of thinking and moving on college campuses. For example, I just came from an inclusion and diversity meeting that was driven by these kinds of considerations. So if people feel these issues deeply and strongly, as Black Lives Matter has been trying to get folks to more fully recognize, and you've seen some headway, for example, in not only Tamir Rice, Timothy McGinty, but also Laquan McDonald, Anita Alvarez, lost her DA's position in Chicago because of the Laquan McDonald, her failure to take action there.
Right.
So that was a success with Black Lives Matter. So it depends on the spirit. If people are still being moved by the spirit of inclusion and diversity that's been driving the Black Lives Matter moment and reckoning with our past, she may find less traction. But I'm just not sure that that's going to be the case, Sonali. We're going to have to see over the next week or two what the impact is.
Jody, it's always a pleasure to have you on our program. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
Jody Armour is the Roy B. Crocker Professor of Law at the University of Southern California. He's the author of Negrophobia: Unreasonable Racism, The Hidden Costs of Being Black in America. He's also a Soros Justice Senior Fellow of the Open Society Institute Center on Crime, Communities, and Culture. And he is the Race and Criminal Justice Correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.